I'm not what you think I am.
Hello, Radsters, and welcome to the weekly roundup with Alex and Dan. I am Dan.
And I am Alex. And again, this is kind of our bread and butter. This is something that we've really looked forward to for the last couple of weeks. I've been sitting on this for the last 3 weeks.
Yep. I only saw this last week.
It's all your fault, Dan. So
this is me holding the show back.
I've been waiting patiently, but no more. I will wait no more because we're going to talk to you today, listeners, about Captain Marvel,
the latest installment from the MCU, and I thought it was a good one.
I thought it was pretty good, but from my perspective, I think MCU films are now going to struggle in the shadow of the Avengers franchise. But we'll come to that perhaps in a little bit later on. We're going to be talking about spoilers here, so if you haven't seen the film, what are you doing listening to this podcast? Give it a pause. Go and pay your £4.50 or whatever it is down at View Cinemas. Not that we take a kickback. Other cinemas are available. And then come back and give us a play. And then let us know whether you agree or disagree with our review. But in true fashion, here's a spoiler alert. And we're going to get straight into it. So, Dan, the plot. So, it's an interesting kind of time period they've chosen here, isn't it?
Yeah, so it actually starts in 1995.
It does, yeah. So this is... it's not the earliest we've seen an MCU film, of course, because we went back, all the way back to World War II.
Yes, so it was the 40s, wasn't it, with Captain America?
Captain America, the first Avenger. It's early enough that this is all where S.H.I.E.L.D. is... it's very early doors, isn't it? This is the grassroots of something that we've obviously seen much later on, 30 plus years. It's a very different time than the 90s.
Yeah.
And a wonderful time, actually. We both grew up in the 90s.
I love the 90s.
Great music, and actually we'll come to the music in a bit. But I think it's a good time period for them to choose. Lots of nostalgia for both me and you. And I think it's a good time for them to choose. But how does the film start off, Dan?
Well, we're starting off on the Kree Empire capital planet of Hala.
We are, yeah. And it literally starts off with the memories of Vers, will do. Which, of course, is Brie Larson, or as we know, Carol Danvers later on, which you realise is her identity. And she's got these flashbacks, and she's troubled by it, but she's not quite sure what quite is going on.
And these nightmares involve an older woman who we later find out is Dr. Wendy Lawson, who is played by Annette Bening.
Mm. Yeah, she's also then, we see her sparring with a Yon Rogg,
who's played by Jude Law.
Who, I think when we were looking at this, we were saying that we weren't too sure whether or not he could pull off one of the supporting characters in the MCU film, but I think he does pretty good in this one.
I also feel like he's a little bit wasted as well.
Yeah, agreed. But I guess we'll touch on cat development a little bit later on. But they're sparring and he's giving her some advice. But they're quickly called into action, aren't they?
Yeah. So they actually go on a mission to rescue an undercover operative that is infiltrating a group of Skrulls who we... Well, we'll get to the plot twist a little bit later on, won't we, Alex?
We will, yeah. But we are introduced to a couple of familiar faces. So we've got Korath, who we see at the beginning of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
2004's sci-fi, tongue-in-cheek classic with Chris Pratt and his merry band of interstellar misfits.
Yes.
I think Korath is he a bounty hunter of some description who's hunting down Star-Lord in that beginning sequence?
Yes, that's right, yes.
And he wants to get the... is it the Power Stone? The purple one?
Yeah, I believe so.
So he's in there. He's part of the Star Force. We also have British-born, born and bred Gemma Chan, Minerva. Again, she's got a bit of a slight cameo. It's not a big role, but actually it's quite nice to see her branching out into the big screen. She's quite big over here in the UK
yep.
For our US listeners. and we know we got you, so thank you for listening. Yeah, she's a fantastic talent, so actually it's nice to see them coming through and playing quite a large part, along with Jude Law, of course, who is from the UK.
I mean, there's this really cool scene as well with Minerva where she shoots her gun and the shot sort of zigzags and takes out a load of different scrolls, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. And we start to see the team working together. We see Brie Larson taking risks as Vaz.
I'm just going to roll with Veers.
Veers. I'll learn it at some point, but Veers. and it all goes a little bit pitong.
Yeah, so Veers,
I think it's Veers. Let's
just work with Veers.
Yeah.
She gets captured by the Skrull commander Talos, who is played by Ben Mendelsohn.
Which I think is a fantastic addition to the film. And we see a little bit of the humour coming through, but it's so much more a little bit later on. We put the spoiler alert out there. He is kind of the anti-hero, I guess, from a retrospective perspective.
Yeah.
I loved him, and I thought he was fantastic and really brought depth to kind of the whole kind of Kree-Skrull war. But fantastic casting.
I'd like to see him again in the future films.
Oh, definitely. I think we will, hopefully, because I think he's been well received. He's captured her. I think we've seen this from the trailer. She's upside down. Looks like they're monitoring her memories. She's getting these flashbacks because they're probing her mind. And she breaks free.
Yeah, she breaks free and just takes out all the scrolls.
In effect, she's handicapped. She's got these two kind of, I don't know what they're, kind of gauntlets.
Yeah.
But they're covered, so she can't use her
photon blasters.
Yeah. So she's hitting scrolls. They're going flying like ragdolls. It's a really funny scene, actually. But she punches a little bit too hard and ends up breaching the ship. And she gets into escape pod, doesn't she?
Yeah.
As well as some of the other scrolls. And it ends up, they're hovering above Earth.
Yes.
And she ends up, as we then see the trailer, going through the top of a Blockbuster store. Now, for those of you who perhaps are lucky enough to be younger than an age where you can remember Blockbusters, it is kind of, you've probably seen it by now. You used to go there, I'm not sure about you, Dan, but you used to go there on a Friday or Saturday night, wander this vast kind of floor space, racks full of all types of genres. You'd pick up a case, which is empty,
yep,
which is kind of crazy. And then you go and pick your don't know what you'd like at cinema, your chocolates or your popcorn. Really bad popcorn, wasn't it?
It was a bit nasty, wasn't it?
Vacuum-packed stuff. Cardboard, and then you'd go home and you'd have it for 2 days, and if you didn't hand it back in 2 days, you were fined something horrific.
Oh god, yes, those were the days. I used to rent games in there as well, actually. It got to a point.
Nintendo
64 games were my thing back in 98, and I used to go there all the time. I know, say I would get so indulged in these games I'd forget to take them back, and then my mum and dad would have to pay some horrific fine.
Which as a model sounds quite terrible from now looking back at it from a 2019 perspective. That's really not a good customer experience. But it was a era of nostalgia, and sure enough, we've got then Brie Larson walking the streets of America.
Yeah, so her presence actually attracts SHIELD agents Nick Fury and Phil Coulson, who are looking a lot younger in this film.
They are, yeah. Some rather fancy digital work. A lot better, it must be said, than X-Men Last Stand, when they tried to do the same with Patrick Stewart as Xavier, which kind of didn't work. His face was floaty and it just was too smooth. Perhaps a very bad Botox experience, it looked like. But this one, I think it looked pretty good. I mean, it looked stable. His face was a little bit contorted. I think it had quite a large forehead. But apart from that, I thought it looked quite good.
Well, they did a good job on Tony Stark in Civil War when he was using the bath technology.
Yeah.
And I watched Civil War, I think, just the weekend just gone with my other half, who also loves Captain Marvel, by the way. I just think the MCU just seems to do a good job of making people look younger.
Yeah, and you know, they really put their money where their mouth is. So, you know, I shudder to think how much they actually spend on the CGI, but it pays off. You know, it really does show. So, we've got a young Phil Coulson and a young Fury. And Fury at this stage, well, we learn he's been sat behind a desk for 6 years, kind of understanding where to take his career next. And he doesn't expect the baddies or the enemies or even perhaps one of the first guiding Avengers to be landing in his lap from the skies.
Oh, yes. We sort of learn a bit more about the Avengers initiative a bit. I think it's towards the end of the film, isn't it?
It is, yeah, in the last scenes.
However, there is a great scene where there's a Skrull who's impersonating Coulson in the car, and he suddenly realises, just from little tidbits, that he gets called Nicholas, am I right?
There's a little bit later on, it's with his boss, head of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That's right.
But no, on this one, Coulson, I think radios in, said, sorry boss, I couldn't make it, I was knocked out or something. It's because a Skrull tried to obviously take his identity and of course sat in the Skrull. So he does it pure Nick Fury style. I believe he goes into incoming traffic and eventually kills the Skrull in his car.
Yeah. All the while Captain Marvel's on the train fighting a little old lady.
Punching an old woman in the face. Which of course, you know, we've seen from the trailers, which is still a pretty good scene. I think it's really good to see just the just how energetic the Skrulls are. And how dangerous they can be in a kind of an urban environment. And they really are, at this part of the film, quite a notable enemy for our budding heroine.
We get a nice little cameo from the late Stan Lee as well, don't we? Who I think was reading a Mallrats comic.
Yeah, I said this to you, Dan, but I didn't give it away, but I did say, for me, this is one of the most touching scenes. And I had a lump in my throat as it happened, because it was just so classy. Brie Larson, Veers, or Brie, you know, whoever, whatever you want to call her, Carol Danvers, she's walking through, she has a quick look down, just a wry smile, he looks back, and, you know, she just lingers for a little bit, and the scene, it really got me. I thought they dealt with it very, very well. You know, this is the first time, I think, is it fair to say that we've seen Stan in a posthumous kind of role since he passed away?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
He had a bit of a cameo in the Spider-Man film, Into the Spider-Verse.
I haven't seen that yet. It's on my to-do list.
That did put a lump in my throat, actually.
But this one was very touching. And what we didn't mention was, Dan, did you see at the beginning credits, you know, where they had the Marvel 10 years?
That did bring a lump to my throat. And I think there was probably the beginnings of a tear in my eye.
Yeah, it was really, really nice touch. Really touching. And it's just wonderful for them to celebrate, you know, what a fantastic career and life of Stan. So that was nice on the train. Very, very classy, very good. Touching, memorable part there. But yeah, it all gets out of hand, and there's a dead Skrull and one that's run away.
Yeah, there's a really cool bit as well where all these passengers think that Veers is fighting this little old lady, and they're trying to hold her back, aren't they?
They are. They're doing the honourable thing. I'm not sure what I would quite do. I'd like to think I'd intervene, but seeing her there, I'm not sure if you quite mess with someone in that costume. But yeah, they're holding her back. She keeps on, you know, getting away and doing a couple of right hooks and haymakers. It transpires that, of course, then they've gotten away and they're out into the wilderness.
Yeah, so she finds a shop, doesn't she? She steals some clothes and some poor gentleman's bike.
Which is a throwback, I think, indirectly probably to Terminator.
Yeah.
Terminator, well, both of them, I think Arnold Schwarzenegger. I think it might be two.
The only good Terminator films in the franchise. The rest of them are awful.
You don't count them. She steals the bike and the leathers and rides off.
Nice little throw to the 90s again with a 9-inch nails t-shirt as well.
And a flannel shirt tucked around her waist.
And while all this is going on, Talos has disguised himself as the S.H.I.E.L.D. director Keller and orders Fury to work with Veers and keep tabs on her.
Yeah. And we see this character and how he's manipulating S.H.I.E.L.D. to obviously try and close down who Fury is now working with Carol Veers in quite a few scenes. But that's not before they have a bit of a heart-to-heart. They have quite an interesting scene where Fury's trying to get his head around this whole kind of Skrulls thing, and he's saying to Carol's saying to Fury, tell me about your background, tell me something that no one would know. And he goes through his whole backstory and how he doesn't like toast cut horizontally, he likes it diagonally in triangles,
yeah,
with the crust cut off. Now, I'm not sure if you noticed this, Dan, or know this, but if you go back to Age of Ultron,
yep,
where, and you're going to probably watch this now afterwards, where they go back to Hawkeye's house out in the countryside.
Yeah, I remember this.
As Fury, you know, reveals himself in the barn, not in a seedy kind of way. This is Nick Fury, guys. Come on, get your head out of the gutter.
This is Samuel Jackson, people.
It is. And he's there talking to the guys, and they're formulating a plan. He's making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and you can see him cutting the sandwich into triangles and cutting off the crust and eating it.
I'm going to have to watch this now.
Which, I'm sure obviously they did it retrospectively, and it was just, a scene throwaway. But it's just a nice kind of continuation to later on, 25 odd years later, we obviously see him doing exactly that. So we know it's Nick Fury there, or at least the Skrull knows that that's a trait. But
yeah,
as far as we're concerned, yeah, it's the original deal at Age of Ultron.
So they're actually using, she stole like a gem, didn't she, or something on the Skrull ship, and they're sort of using her extracted memories, and they discover Project Pegasus.
Yeah, which leads them to a desert, a SHIELD facility, and they're rifling through the records. And again, this is quite a nice scene where we actually see, well, everything come together. So Veers realizes that she does actually have a life on Earth. She was part of this Pegasus project. The woman that we see in her dreams is actually the lead scientist, and it all starts to fall into place.
Yeah.
And also then we then see Keller. He's descended with other SHIELD agents and Coulson. Yep. And we see quite a nice scene where Coulson ends up letting them go, and reports obviously that, you know, the guys are nowhere to be seen, but obviously he's looking at them, which again just goes to show that blossoming kind of bromance, respect between Coulson and Fury, as we later see at Avengers Assemble, which is a nice nod.
Mm.
For sure.
So they managed to escape, don't they? They got onto this cargo jet, which looks a lot like the Quinjet.
Yeah, it's an early version of the Quinjet. Again, this is the early kind of grassroots of SHIELD. And they make a detour to a good friend.
With a companion, of course, which is with Lawson Stowaway cat Goose. Now, for anyone that reads the comics, Goose is actually known as Chewie.
Oh.
Yeah, so apparently it was named Chewie after Chewbacca.
Okay.
In the comics. But yeah, Goose. So they fly to Louisiana and they meet former pilot Maria Rambo, who was the last person to see Veers and Lawson alive.
And her daughter's there as well. We've got some theories about her daughter. We'll catch on Monica a little bit later on. But yeah, they end up putting the final pieces of the puzzle together, because of course her friend was another test pilot. We learned that of course she was part of an accident, and these thoughts and these memories come flooding back. And she realises that she was attacked by what she thought was a Skrull after the ship had downed. And the whole point of it was that this scientist was testing out a new kind of warp drive system, or some fast and speed kind of device. But we don't know at the minute as to why.
No, but then Talos arrives, doesn't he?
He does.
He arrives and he reveals the Skrulls are refugees seeking a new home.
Now, this for me is one of the best plot points, and it's so like the MCU, and Kevin Feige is unreal. So if you haven't read any of the Secret Invasion comics, you don't need to. You know, this is a different kind of medium. In the comics, the Skrulls are actually bad. So as we know at the beginning of the film, the Star Force are there to eradicate these super spies who are finding their way into every nook and cranny of society. And yeah, they're disrupting, you know, governments and the like. But in this film, they play to that, but actually it turns on the head. And yeah, you're right, Dan, they're refugees, they're being hunted by the Kree, and the Kree actually are well, they're the baddies now.
Yeah.
And to that extent, we actually see a very short, and a bit sound biased, but another short cameo by Lee Pace, played by Ronan.
Oh, yes. He was in Guardians of the Galaxy 1 as well.
He was the big bad.
The big
bad. So, what we're seeing is, in his original role, he's part of the Accusers, the Destroyers, who are, I guess, the advanced party who end up bombing Skrull planets to obliteration so that they obviously don't get off planet and they don't escape. So he's more of the heavy hand, and we see his ship, which we actually see in Guardians of the Galaxy, coming to Earth. He's effectively there to bomb the crap out of Earth and to lay waste to the Skrulls.
And we also learned that Lawson was Mar-Vell, who was actually a renegade Kree scientist that was helping the Skrulls.
Yeah, and again, this is quite a nice kind of way to get that character into the film, because Mar-Vell was a superhero, an original Kree superhero, then passes on the mantle later on to Carol Danvers. Of course, he's an Earthling. They didn't really want to experience or to talk about that different plot points, so they just had her as a scientist but still kept the name. I think it's a quite nice way of doing it. And the scientist, of course, is now there to save the day, but of course she perishes in that crash.
Yeah, I mean, there's this really cool moment as well where Talos is playing like a recovered recording of Lawson's jet, where ultimately we see Veers, or now she knows she's Carol Danvers, of flying that jet, and they're being chased by the Kree ship and they're shooting at them. It crashes, and then
well, it's not a Skrull that shoots the occupants.
No, it's actually Jude Law, Yon Rogg,
lays waste to Mar-Vell and tries to have a pop at Carol Danvers, but the warp drive or whatever goes critical, and that's how she gets her powers.
Yeah, so this blows up and she absorbs this energy, and
she's a mutant.
It also causes amnesia.
I reckon she's a mutant.
Who dabbers?
Well, no one else can absorb that amount of power and not die, and they do say that.
That's true.
So, just saying. Because the Fox Marvel Disney deal went through this week.
Yes, it did.
So, I think it's the early signs of a mutant, the M word. But anyway, yes. So they realise then that they've got to go to a cloaked laboratory up in orbit that's been sat there for a good couple of years.
Yeah.
Well, at least seven. So. I think she's been with Star Force. I think it was like 7 years later, at the beginning of the film. So it's been hovering up there for a while. And we come across some familiar friends and also a familiar artifact.
Oh, we're referring to the Tesseract, which first made its appearance in Captain America.
It does.
First Avenger.
Yeah. The Tesseract has quite an interesting history. I will not talk you through it now. We'll perhaps do a small episode a little bit later on. But suffice to say, it's been sat in a lunchbox for the last nearly a decade. Overlooked by Talos's family and other refugees who have been waiting for someone to return, or at least Talos to return to get them home or to find them a new place. And we also learn that the Skrulls are not particular fans of cats.
No, because actually the cat was a Flerkin.
Yeah, so Goose isn't a cat. Actually, he's got some massive tentacled wide-mouthed, alien predator-esque type mouth, and eats people.
Oh yeah, it's
some quite funny scenes actually where the Skrulls are obviously petrified, and it's just a little cat, ginger cat.
Yeah, they're like, oh no, it's a Flerkin, get away!
It's a Flerkin, and of course,
the Flerkin.
We just think it's a word for cat, but it's not.
No. So where are we? So Starforce turn up.
They do.
They gate crash this little reunion between Talos and his family and all the other Skrulls, and they take her hostage, and
she faces the Supreme Intelligence.
Yes, so this is like the art of artificial intelligence of the Kree, isn't it?
Yeah, which runs their society. So everything's run by AI, no longer free will. But it turns out that the AI is looking to eradicate Skrulls from the universe, sees them as a threat. It's rather unfair, and Cal decides that is the case well. And it's kind of a Matrix-esque kind of scene where actually she starts to lay waste to the AI through her powers. I don't quite understand it, but she's interlinked, And yeah, she takes them on. And then the rest of her Star Force colleagues. And she's going toe-to-toe, punching the, you know, 10 bells out of them. It was really quite a cool kind of set of fight scenes, I think.
Really cool bit as well, where she's approaching the supreme figure, I guess, is what we'll call her. Got Nirvana, Come As You Are playing.
Yeah, really good. And again, really good. The soundtrack is of the time. It's perfectly chosen and sums up the scene quite nicely.
And she gets rid of the Kree implant, which we learned has been suppressing all of her powers.
Yeah. So she's the safety catch has been let loose, and yeah, she fully appreciates just what she can do.
There's this cool moment as well where Goose decides he's going to eat the Tesseract, which we see later on, don't we?
We do.
In a cutscene. And there's a bit where some Kree guards approach Nick Fury, and he just holds the cut up in front of them. And then Goose eats them as well.
Yeah.
And then he turns around to some more Kree guards, and Goose is like, nah, I'm not going to eat them. It turns out one of the Kree is just Talos in disguise.
There you go.
So cats are trusting creatures, apparently.
They certainly are. Anyway, Danvers escapes. They go back to Earth, and she's fighting aerial combat and taking out various ships. And on looks, of course, Ronan, who is amazed and aghast at this new superpower. And he says, we'll come back, effectively.
Yeah.
Now, he doesn't, as far as we're aware, in the timeline we've seen so far. But, you know, there's a good 25 years between. So he may well return to try and go toe-to-toe with Carol. But as far as we're aware, she doesn't return and doesn't need to protect Earth. But he does vow to return at some point.
I mean, could Captain Marvel follow in this episode Wonder Woman, where we'll see it sort of set again in the middle?
I think it would have to, because what she be doing not to answer a call sooner? But I guess we'll come to how this all plays out in the MCU wide in a bit. But I thought the ending was a little bit flat for me, Dan. I'm not sure about you, but she ends up going toe-to-toe with Yon Rogg.
Yeah, I thought it would be a bit more of a fight scene, but instead of going toe-to-toe and fighting Yon Rogg like she does at the beginning, she just photon blasts him into a rock.
Which, it was unexpected. I saw an opening night, did get quite a few chuckles, but you're expecting this massive fight, and it's quite the opposite. She just shuts him down. I mean, it's quite empowering, you know, from a female lead. She effectively says, I don't need to fight you, so I'm not going to, I'm better than you. Ties him up, puts him to a shuttle, and sends him effectively running back with a message to the rest of the Kree Empire, basically saying, I'm coming for you, and I'm going to uncover your lies, which is great. And obviously that leads into, I guess, a sequel.
One bit we did overlook, actually, was Goose scratching Fury's eye to make him blind. Do you think that's a bit of a cop-out? Because when I think back to, it was the Winter Soldier, he says this.
Soldiers trust each other. That's what makes it an army, not a bunch of guys running around shooting guns.
Last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye.
Do you think that's a bit of a cop-out with Goose scratching the eye, or do you think it could have been something more?
I think they could have had a richer background. Perhaps what happened was Feige had planned to do an origin story with just a Nick Fury film that perhaps hasn't come off, and have thought they'll do it in kind of a, you know, a comical fashion. Yeah, it's an interesting one. So this happens at the end of the scene in the house, and you know, the cat, sure enough, scratches his face. He's like, oh no, it's just a scratch. He's like, well no, it's just taken out of your eye, Nick Fury. It's not just a scratch. But he doesn't seem to really be too fazed by it.
No,
which I think was a bit strange,
because there was a cool scene where he's like, oh, it's just a scratch, and the Skrull's like, oh no.
Yeah, so you do wonder whether, you know, it's becoming infected or something. But anyway, yeah, I mean, Nick Fury, you know, his secrets have secrets, I think someone said. Perhaps it was in the Winter Soldier. So you, even if he said, you know, there was a more of a meaning behind it, no one's really going to believe that a Flurkin is taken out of his eye because he was playing with a cat. So it kind of makes sense, I guess.
So we sort of just leave the film where Danvers departs to help the Skrulls find a new homeworld, and she sort of leaves Fury behind with the modified pager, which we see at the end of Infinity War.
We do, yeah, just as he's going into dust.
Oh, no.
Well done.
And yeah, he's got this modified pager with the promise of only using it when she's needed. And he's at his desk. And yep. Coulson says, oh, well, I'm sure we'll find a Tesseract at some point. Little does, of course, he know that the Flerkin has got it in his tummy. The cat, Goose, sat there purring away in the corner of the office. And Fury's typing on a computer. And a very old computer. I mean, I had one for about 2 years before we upgraded to a PC with floppy disks. But I recognise this kind of green screen kind of setup. And he's typing a new initiative, isn't he? Now he's got the idea of powers coming from space. He's thinking of a new initiative, isn't he?
Yeah, so there's this really cool picture of Carol getting into her plane. It's got Avenger on it.
It does. That's her call sign on her jet.
I can't quite remember what he was calling the initiative initially, but he scrubs out the first bit and then puts Avengers. And then credits roll.
Credits do roll. And then we get two, as we usually do, two end credit scenes. So the first one, Dan, this one is directly into Endgame.
Yeah, so we come back to the present day and the page is actually being monitored by the Cap, Widow, Banner and Rhodey. I believe was
there. Rhodey's there as well, yeah.
And this thing's going off, and then it stops. And then I believe it's Cap that goes, oh, can you get it going again?
Well, it's Black Widow. She's losing her shit. She's saying, look, you need to get this back up in line. And he's like, well, we don't know where it goes or what it does. She's like, well, if Fury had this, it's bloody going to be important. So get it to work, Banner. I'm not interested. And he's like, well, I'll see what I can do.
And there's a reason why it stopped bleeping.
Because she turns around. We don't even know that she turned up there. Turns around and who's there?
Captain Marvel.
Carol Danvers just stood there and she says, where's Fury?
And then credits roll again. And then we get to the second credit scene. We get to the second cut scene. And we're back in 1995 where Goose is on Nick Fury's table. For any cat lovers that have ever seen a cat regurgitate a furball, this is exactly it.
And it's not a furball that comes out, but it's a tesseract, a glowing blue cube.
Yeah.
Now, we don't see this blue cube, tongue-tied there, until much later at the end of Thor, the first Thor film, where Fury opens a case to the scientist, Dr. Selvig, and says, look... do you recognise this? Would you like to work on it? And of course, then that leads directly then into Avengers Assemble. So there's quite a long period of time where we don't really know. It's about 10, 12 years. What is going on and what Coulson's actually doing with this? But we can only assume he has failed to be able to, you know, to really get to harnessing its power. We know that there's been lots of tests. He knows it is a source of power, but he's been sat on an Infinity Gem for quite a long time.
Yeah.
But that's the film. Now, Dan, I guess the reason why I gave it a 4 out of 5, and I kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier on, was because every film that is going to be compared to Infinity War and Endgame is going to pan in insignificance.
Yeah.
Because they're so grand and they've got so much of investment, you know, in terms of production value. I mean, for this one, you had Coulson, who everyone loves from Avengers Assemble. Fury, you can't get much bigger than Samuel L. Jackson. You've even got Korath, who makes a return, as we said, from First Guardians, and of course, the big bad from that film, of course. We've also got Ronan the Accuser.
Yep.
But that's still not enough, in my opinion. I still did look at this and go, this is... like 5 out of 5 best film of this year, because I just know there's another film just around the corner in a couple of weeks' time and it's got everyone in it and it's not going home. Is going large.
It's going to be 3 hours long. This film.
It's going to be an epic, and I think that's the problem with these films now. These solo outings, they can't possibly match up to this. We've seen the heights, the lofty heights of an Avenger film, and anything compared to that is just not enough. But if you take a step back, in my opinion, Dan, and you look at it and go, is it a good film? Is it a good Origins film? Yeah, it's better than the Thor. It's not better than Captain America, but it's up there in terms of a really good, solid introduction to the character. And for that reason, it's got to be a 4 out of 5 for me.
I'm going to give it 4.5. It wasn't perfect for me. I felt like at times there was just a little bit too much going on.
Lots of dialogue.
Yeah, and it just felt like some parts were just a bit crammed together, but I loved it. My other half loved it more than I did. She loved the strong superhero, seeing a female...
About time.
...Marvel film. And, yeah, she actually told me off, because I was sort of going, oh, I wasn't perfect as I was walking out to the mall, and she gave me a proper telling off.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
But it's done quite well, so other people must agree as well with how well it's performed, because it's... You're telling me a fact, Dan, about... it's the highest grossing...
It's the highest grossing female-fronted film of all time.
There you go. So, they've obviously done something right. But before we get into favourite characters, their development, and then closing impressions, I'm just going to have a quick break in the episode.
Aren't you the cutest little thing?
Gary.
And it's that part of the show where we'd like to hear from you, the listener. Isn't that right, Dan?
That is right. And we would like to hear from you. Have you got some news you'd like us to share? Have you got an idea for a future episode? Or do you just have an opinion on a previous episode and you want to give us your thoughts?
Please do. There's a couple of ways. So on Facebook and Twitter, at hello.twrad for Facebook and hello_twrad for Twitter. Instagram, we've got plenty of posts on Instagram. Hello.twrad, and for Gmail, you can send us a good old-fashioned email. hello.twrad@gmail.com. But there's also Anchor, Dan, isn't there?
Yes. Takes seconds to download. The app is free, and these guys are wonderful. They share our podcasts through all the different channels and platforms, and you can also hear us on Spotify as well. However, we want to hear from you, and you can leave us a voice message just by clicking that one little button.
And we like that button. So please do get in touch. Let us know your thoughts and feelings, and perhaps you can be part of the next episode. But until next time, I've been Alex.
And I've been Dan.
I'll see you in a couple of moments.
And you're a Kree. A race of noble warriors.
Heroes. Noble warrior heroes.
Hello, Radsters. We are back. And now we're going to be talking about our favourite characters from Captain Marvel.
Yeah, now I've got three.
Okay, I want to say two, but sort of reflecting on the film, I've got three as well now.
Okay. You go first, Dan. After you.
Well, first I'm going to start off with Talos, as I mentioned in the early stages of this episode. I really liked him as a character.
Yeah, Ben Mendelsohn does a top quality job in this. In whatever facial makeup they've done, he just brings humour to the role. Very tongue in cheek, quite sarcastic.
Yeah.
Great character, and actually. I never really bought into him being the big bad. You know, he was just a bit of a silly baddie. But actually, if you look at it from the lens of he's only a fugitive and someone who wants to find a place in the world or in the universe, and he's on the good side, I quite warmed to him towards the end. I thought he was fantastic. And again, that turning things on its head is just typical Kevin Feige. Awesome twist.
Yeah, absolutely. Second up for me is Carol Danvers. I'll probably talk a little bit more about her in the character development.
Okay.
But it was quite nice to, again, see that female superhero-fronted movie from Marvel. And I think she's very strong. And I think, going forward, she could maybe front some future Avengers films.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's ultimately, if you've had any of our episodes before, you'll know that that's where we think it's going with it. Contracts are coming to an end and hers are just starting. I haven't seen any of Brie Larson's stuff. I know she's won awards. I think even is it an Oscar she's won, or she's been nominated. I know she's had plenty of nominations and awards under her belt. So she's, even before this film has taken place, she's well respected in the industry.
I've seen her in, it was Kong Skull Island with Tom Hiddleston, and I really enjoyed that film.
Okay. I thought she was fantastic. She really does add the element of humanity, the backstory with her losing her memory, trying to find it, the good relationships that she has with the Star Force colleagues, Yon Rogg, by Jude Law, and some of the other team, and eventually then the camaraderie and, you know, the tongue-in-cheek kind of sarcastic relationship she has with Fury. It's a very buddy cop-esque kind of role, and I really liked it. I think she's a fantastic role model. About time that they had a lead female actress take the reins of a film, and she's done fantastic. So yeah, I agree, Dan. She's also my my second one.
Last up for me is Nick Fury.
So we got the same, 3 for 3. But why is the one-eyed super spy your favourite, Dan?
It was nice to sort of see him in the beginnings of his role. He's just like a normal, don't want to say a cop, but he's sort of very low down, isn't he?
Yeah.
And again, we'll sort of talk about this more in the character development, where you sort of see a little bit more of him coming out as the film goes on.
Well, let's touch on it now. So Fury, for me, in the character development, there's two for me. So Fury, he's almost like a rookie cop.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say. So he's done his beats. He's done some of the kind of CIA type style special ops. He sat behind a desk. Time's running out. And just before the end, we've got this super woman landing in his lap, almost literally. And, you know, we see a very vulnerable version of Fury. He's never seen anything like this before. There are aliens, and there's a woman who can blast things out of her hands and eventually can fly. And he's almost, you can see, he's not quite overwhelmed, but he's close to it.
Yeah, because as you sort of like seeing the Avengers films, he's generally unfazed by things, isn't he?
And I think that is because, Dan, I think in this film, he doesn't know anything. Everything has been turned on its head. He hasn't learned yet to expect the unexpected. But when he gets to the Avengers and onwards, he knows everything.
Oh, yeah.
He knows more than the people that he's speaking to. His secrets have secrets.
You think Fury's hiding something?
He's a spy.
Captain,
he's the spy. His secrets have secrets.
He's been planning this for decades, and he knows, I'm pretty sure he knows about Thanos.
Yeah. Going back to the dead Skrull in his car as well, it's that shock on his face, it's that horror, like, oh my God.
It's legitimate horror, and we've never seen that in that character before.
No.
And that's why, for me, this is my choice of character development, because we see a very, a younger version, but as I say, quite an exposed one as well. You know, he's very much outside his comfort zone. And it's nice to see that he doesn't have all the answers. He is learning and taking Carol Danvers' lead. She's the lead in this, and he's behind and he's supporting. And it's never seen that version of this character before. So that's why it's nice to go back to the beginning, see him in this kind of minor role. And yeah, he doesn't have all the answers for once.
No. Second up for me was Carol Danvers. Now, I suppose you don't really see too much of her character development, and I'd like to see a bit more of that in the future. But it's that struggle of having amnesia and trying to figure out her past and who she actually is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think going forward, I'd like to see just a little bit more. Maybe like in the second film, touch a little bit more on her origins.
And I think this is where some people have criticised it, and I'm somewhere in the middle. So some people have said, well, you know, in a typical Marvel film, you see someone who has some poor character traits, they have a fall from grace, and then they find their honour, and they go through this journey as a character. You see it from Thor. Thor thinks he is, you know, the bee's knees. He is the next king of Asgard. He's more than happy to wage war, but truly at the end of it, he realises actually he isn't the true king. He's Odin still is, he shouldn't be seeking out war, he should be seeking out peace, and that he's not to be feared. He should be an entity that should be supporting Earth. You look at Captain America, a little bit different. He's always got that kind of self-righteousness, but in a positive way. Mm. But if you look at, you know, even Tony Stark, Iron Man, he goes through his alcoholism. Well, the inferred alcoholism that we see from Doom in the Bottle comics.
Sort of playboy philanthropist.
Yeah.
Raining down missiles in the desert. And then he sort of realises, actually, I'm doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
I need to put my intelligence, my knowledge, and all my technology into something.
To the greater good. To the greater good, exactly. But people are criticising, saying that in this film, the lead character doesn't have any of that. She kind of is the same character all the way through. She doesn't have a fall from grace. She doesn't really change her tact. She just finds out, actually, she's got another part of her identity. But ultimately, she goes on the war path at the end of the film. And that's where I kind of can see their criticism. But on the other hand, perhaps she doesn't need to. Because she this film doesn't need her to go through that kind of journey. She's always been her.
Yeah.
You could say, well, then not an awful lot happens. But I think I'm all right with it. I know what they're saying, and I agree. When I first came out of it, that's the first thing I said to one of my mates who I went with. I said, look, she doesn't really go through that experience, but does she? I don't think it's really, you know, essential. So I can overlook it, but I can understand why there's some criticism there, of course.
I think there's room, say, for the future. I bought my other half a graphic novel recently, Captain Marvel, The Life of Captain Marvel, written by Margaret Stoll, I want to say. And it opens up with her having this massive fight with someone, and then she has an anxiety attack, which sort of cripples her in this fight. And I've not read it yet. I think I'd like to once my other half's done with it. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how she sort of deals with that anxiety and flashbacks of her past.
Yeah.
So I think there's room for maybe introducing that sort of thing in the future.
Yeah, perhaps. And just the other thing to talk about, the little girl.
Oh, yes. Was it Monica?
Yeah.
Monica Rambeau.
So we've both got a theory. We've been messaging each other since Dan saw it very recently. And we think we've found the new Iron Avenger.
Yeah.
Well, at least I do. Do you think that too, Dan?
No, my theory is that she, in the comics, she goes on to become Photon. She was also known as Pulsar, and around 2013, she changed the name again to Spectrum. Only because of the timeline and the possibility of Feige introducing the cosmic MCU.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we'll see her.
Hedging bets there.
You've got your Iron Man theory.
Yeah, so I think it's Riri Thomas, I want to call her, but her actual name is Riri in the comics. I'm not up to speed with that particular comic book arc, but Tony Stark either is retired or he snuffs it. But anyway, Riri picks up the mantle.
I remember what happened. Civil War 2, Captain Marvel puts Tony into a coma, but he comes back as some weird artificial intelligence.
Right.
Which is why, but Riri was always in the background anyway, making this Iron Man suit.
Yeah, it's a young teenager, she's tinkering, and she ends up taking on the Iron Man armour, but she's built it herself, and she's an upcoming talent, kind of similar to Tony Stark, who's younger. Mm. I don't know, Robert Downey Jr.'s ending contract, I think he isn't going to survive Endgame. We need that presence there. Another strong female character. I'm just saying, Dan, I think she's...
Could happen.
She's ripe to take... Because she looks longingly... She looks up to Carol Danvers and she sees her flying off into the sky at the end of the film, and she said, I want to be like you. I just think it's foreshadowing in a positive way, but we'll see. We've got two interesting theories there, but I think it's fair to say, though, Dan, you're right. Either way, we're going to see that character coming back sooner or later.
Absolutely. So we had some people writing to us.
We did. We got your views. So what have people said, Dan?
So first up, we got Claire, who said, I loved it. Nice, like the emoji with the little hearts and the eyes. 5 out of 5 stars for me. I've been waiting a long time for Marvel to introduce a character like this, because I feel like the female characters so far have been a bit of a side note.
That's fair.
I read her graphic novels, so wasn't sure on Brie Larson in the role, but I thought she captured that sense of humour that Carol Danvers has. I thought the twist was great, and the film showed a lot more backstory that just how Captain Marvel came to be, like why Ronan now has a vendetta against the Kree.
Yeah.
The 90s element was well placed as well and very clever. Overall, I loved it and I think it leads us right into Endgame in such a great way.
Agreed, yeah. We're now familiar with such a powerhouse that, no one's going to be new to us. Although I think there will be some new characters released in that film. It's going to be a familiar, welcome face, and I think it's going to be a great addition to the film.
Next up, we've got Fiona.
Oh, hi, Fiona.
She says, possibly a new favourite. I thought she was so inspiring, and I coincidentally saw it on International Women's Day, which we actually celebrated on the radio, didn't we?
We did.
Recently. Which felt perfect. I can't wait for Endgame now. And she goes on to say, agree with knitting into the MCU and the soundtrack.
Yeah, quality soundtrack, again, taken. It's similar to, I guess, Guardians of the Galaxy, where they've taken some like the 70s kind of genre kind of soundtracks from the tapes that, of course, Star-Lord got from his mum. They've done similar kind of in the 90s with 90s music. Fantastic soundtrack. Definitely one to download when they release that one.
Next up, we've got my namesake, Dan. He gave it a 9 out of 10.
Oh, okay.
I really enjoyed it. Can't wait to see her kill Thanos.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I like what you're saying, Dan, but I don't see her ultimately being the one who punches those purple bollocks off his chin. I just don't see it.
I mean, I just think the way I'm thinking is that we've had 10, 11 years of the MCU now. If she's the one to do it at a month old, you're sort of taking it away from the Downey Juniors, the Chris Hemsworths, the Chris Evans, etc. I want them, if they're going to be bowing out after Endgame, I want it to be about them.
Yeah, no, agreed.
Next up, we got Gavin. He says, did a great job introducing the character and knitting the plot into the overall timeline. The 90s nostalgia and soundtrack was perfectly judged. Visually, it's possibly the only movie where I thought 3D added to the experience.
Oh, really?
I don't do 3D films, I'm afraid.
I tend not to, but I mean, I need to go and see this for a second time, so perhaps it's either going to be an IMAX stroke 3D experience. He's a good shout then, Gav.
He also agrees with us. He says the de-aging of Fury was seamless. The technology has leapt forward from Rogue One, where it looks a bit creepy and unnatural. The girl power vibe felt overly forced at times, in the sense that they had crafted a superhero that was objectively kick-ass regardless of gender.
Mm.
It felt like they were labouring the point in response to past criticism rather than just let the movie speak for itself. Glad there was a little nugget thrown in to whet the appetite for Endgame, unlike the blatant teasers in the Spider-Man credits. 4 out of 5 for me.
Okay. We've got some couple from Twitter. So Izzy H, she said, just seen Captain Marvel and it was so awesome. At Brie Larson, you are amazing. With a couple of clapping hands emojis and the rock sign.
Oh, yeah.
Which is good. We've also got here... Brittany, she says, I think we need a Captain Marvel and Thor movie, directed by Taika Waititi, of course. I guess that's a director of some description.
Taika Waititi? Oh, he did Thor Ragnarok.
There you go. So we've got lots of love on Twitter. We've got any more comments from social media?
Last up is Stacey.
Hi, Stacey.
I thought it was really good. Looking forward to Endgame.
So, yeah, all pass now, at least in the minute. Leads to the biggest film of 2019, the most anticipated of the year, and we know she does feature in it. We've seen her, of course, at the end credits. Did you want to talk about the TV spot just briefly, Dan? Quick wrap up.
Oh, yes. Well, we had the new trailer last week as well, didn't we?
We did, and well, this happened.
I like this one.
And yeah, there's Thor basically saying that he likes this one, which is Carol Danvers as he's summoning his Stormbreaker, is it?
Yikes.
Um, And yeah, she's pretty much, she's the party now. She's familiarized herself with the team, and she's been welcomed by a god, no less.
It's great because the hammer comes flying straight past her head.
She doesn't flinch.
She doesn't flinch. She just looks unfazed, and there's like this little wry smile on her face, like a. And then Thor's just like, I like this one.
Yeah, and it's good because again, it just goes to show that there's someone else who he sees on an equal level, which plays to the whole kind of equality, which is fantastic. And I think actually there could be quite the you know, the team up with those two. Very similar in terms of power. In fact, I think Captain Marvel's probably stronger than Thor, but they're very similar nonetheless. You can't have those two heavy hitters though up against Thanos. You know, he's just, he'll be overpowered so quickly. That's why I don't think actually Thanos will ultimately bite the dust. I think they'll leave him to it, and they'll end up trying to undo everything they've done, or he's done.
Yeah.
Because what good would that do them? Seek revenge will not undo anything unless they physically go and do it themselves. So that's why I think that ultimately, if we look ahead, I don't see Captain Marvel really being too much of an influence for that film. I think she'll help out initially, but she's too overpowered, and I don't think that's the way the film's going to go. Everyone's saying it's going to be, and we just know that the MCU and Kevin Feige like to do the complete opposite, and that's why I think, for that reason, I don't think she's going to be the saviour we need her to be.
It's too easy.
It definitely is.
But that wraps up for our Captain Marvel review.
It does, yeah. Let us know what your thoughts are. Do you disagree with us? Do you think that the Skrulls were a bad play and actually they should have been the big bads close to the comics? Do you think that we didn't see enough of Coulson? I certainly think so. Or did you want to see more of Goose? What are they called?
Oh, the Flerkin.
The Flerkins. Do you want to see more Flerkins perhaps in future films? Let us know. We've shared you the contact details in the halftime break, but please do get into contact. Of course, use Anchor as our preferred method of doing so. You can leave us a message
and be a part of the podcast. But we've got some episodes coming up which we'd like your involvement in. So we want to hear about your all-time baddies, and we've already touched on Endgame, but we're going to be doing an episode on theories, and I've got an interesting one on Tony Stark and his left arm.
Okay, interesting enough. That's very specific anatomically. I'll be interested to hear what your thoughts are, Dan. But yeah, get in contact with us. Leave us your thoughts, messages. We'll be recording that in the next couple of weeks, of course, before Endgame comes out in the cinemas. Of course, we all can't wait. But I guess for another week, I've been Alex.
I've been Dan.
And we'll see you next time.